In this episode, we're going to be breaking down all the major moves that happened this trade deadline, talk about some notable hot and cold streaks, and break down the upcoming All-Star weekend. Let's just jump right into it. All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Time Out Talk. We're your host, Raphael Singer.
And Hunter Leon.
The trade deadline has came and went. And while there were not a ton of crazy blockbuster moves, there were some really important trades that did go down and might change the balance of power in the NBA. So we're going to rate and kind of break down all the biggest ones. And I think that, honestly, the team that, in my opinion, was the biggest winner of this trade deadline was the Dallas Mavericks, who traded Rashawn Holmes, Grant Williams, who was, I guess, a key part of the rotation, and some other draft compensation to get PJ Washington from the Hornets and Daniel Gafford. So, Hunter, are you a fan of this move? And what are your thoughts on the Mavericks post-trade deadline?
Yeah, honestly, I was kind of surprised that they were getting rid of Grant Williams, just because this team, a big thing they lack is like perimeter defense, like, you know, having Luka and Kyrie, they just don't have a lot to compensate for, you know, the lack of perimeter defense. And Grant Williams was the one guy who could do that. So I was questioning this move a little bit at first, but really just watching this Daniel Gafford connection with Luka is really incredible. Like, just how good Luka makes big men, it's really great to see. Like, he can see how Washington wasn't truly tapping into his potential because he didn't have anyone great to get him the ball. And, you know, in his debut game, he has something like 17 rebounds, like 16 points. Like, you can't ask any more of a big man than that. And it's something very similar to Derek Lively. So I think they have a big two beasts there in Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively, who can come in, you know, interchangeably. And then PJ Washington's just going to light it up for them in the corner, light it up from top of the key, and just be the, you know, the floor spacing at a big position that they need when they have a guy like Daniel Gafford or Derek Lively in there. So
yeah,
what would you grade this trade, and just what were your thoughts?
I mean, as like two separate moves, I think combined, it's like, you know, pretty much like an A minus maybe. Like, you're not giving up too much. I think Rashawn Holmes had kind of fallen his way out of the rotation. Grant Williams clearly bothered people in the organization, and that's all the reports that are coming out. Like, people within the Mavericks organization and probably players on the team just did not really like him. As a person, he didn't really fit in. And so him leaving was a big plus. And then you're getting back in return Daniel Gafford, you know, big, athletic, defensive big man that, you know, is going to complement Luka perfectly. So now you have, for 48 minutes, two of the prototypical archetypes that work well alongside Luka, with Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford. So that's an excellent move. And then PJ Washington, I thought, was also a good pickup. You didn't really have to give that much, and he's going to be a decent rotational guy for you. I actually think that the sort of defense for the Mavericks is a bit overstated. I mean, yes, they're not a good defensive team. Like, they're a below average defensive team, but Grant Williams is not providing too much on that side of the ball. And they do have solid guys like Derek Jones Jr. who have been picking up the slack on that end of the floor. So I think this is a great move from Dallas. I'd give it maybe like an A minus, just because what they got in return for what they had to give up, great value.
Yeah, that's fair.
What would you rate it?
On to next trade though. No, I think A minus is a very fair grade. You know, okay. I'd stick to that. Moving on to next trade though, the New York Knicks made a big splash as well. I think they were a big winner at the deadline. Mm-hmm. They got Bogdan Bogdanovic and Alec Burks in exchange for Quentin Grimes, Evan Fournier, and Malachi Flynn. Quentin Grimes was like maybe a little bit of part of the rotation, but Evan Fournier had been a perennial bench warmer for two whole seasons, and Malachi Flynn was definitely not seeing floor time. You know, Bogdanovic is just a great sniper, a guy who can, you know, go off for 25 points on any given night. That's just really great to add to this Knicks team. So, Rafa, what grade are you giving this trade, and just what are your overall thoughts?
I give this one, I'm going to give it an A minus, because I think for it to be an A, it has to be like, you know, complete home run. Honestly, actually, I might give this one an A. I think that it is a home run. You're, as you said, you're barely giving up anything of worth. I mean, Quentin Grimes was a solid player, and he was sort of one of those end of the rotation guys that, you know, when the Knicks had injuries, he would get a bigger role, and he showed some promise as a young player in this league. But I mean, what you're getting back in return is two 40+% shooters in Bogdanovich and Burks. Bojan Bogdanovic is having an amazing season in Detroit, averaging above 20 points. And while obviously he's not going to be averaging the same usage or the same volume in New York, you know, you're giving some much needed offense to this incredible defensive unit. And so by being able to just basically like reshape your offense and just give yourself the depth and firepower you need at such a low cost, it just seems like a home run from Leon Rose and the whole Knicks front office. So they did great. I'd give this move an A. How do you feel? Because I'm pretty big on the Knicks, and this just kind of solidifies them for me as a real contender.
Yeah, I'm keeping this also an A. I'll call it A minus because I think this is like on par with that Mavs trade.
Yep.
So I'm gonna be consistent across the board. But I really don't think they could have done much better, especially because the asking price for Bojan Bogdanovic reportedly was in the range of like a first and a good young player, and they clearly had to give less than that to receive him. So
Yeah, barely had
I
to
think
give
they
up.
did
I
good.
don't think they gave up any like serious draft compensation either. So great move from the
Yeah.
Knicks, kept their first round picks. Really good job from New York.
Yeah, real quick, we don't have to talk too much about this, but the Pistons waived Killian Hayes.
Yeah, I mean, I think them waiving Killian Hayes is kind of insane. I definitely think you could have gotten some value in return for a former number 7 overall pick. I also think that the Pistons, this trade deadline, I would give them a D if I was rating their deadline performance. They gave up, you know, a lot of value, and I don't think they got a single first round pick in
I'd
return.
give them an F. Dude, they literally did nothing. This is an organization with very little direction, like relative to other young organizations who are starting to win and, shape their core. This is a team that clearly has, pieces missing and young players that like are just won't be a part of their future. They do have some great talent, young talent like Jalen Duren, Jaden
Yeah.
Ivey, Cade Cunningham, but that's not enough guys in today's NBA. And you got nothing back for Killian Hayes. And Bogdan Bogdanovic, a guy you were asking two first round picks for, you literally gave up nothing to get for him.
Yeah. And I think that that's a good point. I'm gonna degrade them or make their grade a D minus just because I think that, you know, they got absolutely nothing of real value, like no solid young pieces, no real draft compensation. And so this just screams of, you know, a lack of direction from the organization, especially after we've seen so many teams like the Oklahoma City Thunder, you know, have a very solid and clear direction and be way ahead of schedule in terms of actually being a competing franchise. So I would give the Pistons a D minus. Speaking of the Oklahoma City Thunder, let's actually talk about them briefly. So they did not make too many moves this deadline, but they did sort of get one of the veteran players that, you know, we've been talking about them lacking in Gordon Hayward from the Charlotte Hornets in exchange for Trey Mann and you know, a couple other guys, Davis Bertans, like guys that were not really a big part of their team. So, I mean, what do you think of this move from the Thunder? And do you think this is really like the veteran presence they need to really guide them through a deep playoff run?
Yeah, the one thing we talked about this team is like something they were missing is they're just way too young. Their average age is the youngest in the NBA, and they didn't have a vet. Gordon Hayward, I love Gordon Hayward's game. I think he's very injury prone, but I think it's just very well-rounded. He can give you a ton of different stuff. And for a guy who's going to be giving you maybe 18 minutes a night, I think he's a nice bench piece. Now, as a veteran, I don't necessarily know how much value he's giving to you just because he hasn't really been in too many of those situations. He's been on the Hornets for a while, but before that, he was on that Celtics team where he got injured and didn't play. And before that, and that team was a mess as far as like veteran leadership. Like Kyrie Irving kind of led that team like down the bad a bad, path chemistry wise. So there wasn't really a nice veteran presence there. And then before that, he was playing on the Utah Jazz where he was that young star. So I don't really think he's necessarily the type of veteran who's going to be like a great vocal leader and be able to necessarily ease the nerves of guys in those big playoff moments. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he does have that experience, and maybe just, from learning from other vets, he's become that kind of vet. So, I don't want to say just because he hasn't necessarily had that experience himself, he can't be there for those guys. But I think there's definitely better veterans you could have gotten probably at the same price to do the same thing.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same ballpark as you. I think that, you know, if you're looking for a guy who's really going to rally your team, a guy like, you know, Marcus Smart, I don't know. Like even a guy like
Patrick Beverley, even like a guy like that, you
yeah,
know?
Patrick Beverley, like Dylan Brooks, like guys who like maybe are not gonna contribute that much on the court, but like are gonna be there as a sort of uniting presence and are really gonna inspire and galvanize your squad. I don't think Gordon Hayward is that guy. I mean, just look at his time in Charlotte, right? He was basically the sole veteran there, was supposed to kind of be that mentor, guiding figure, and didn't really do anything of note. The Hornets have been a
But to
complete mess, complete disaster, and he hasn't done
I would
anything about
say
that.
to be fair about the Hornets, like when LaMelo Ball was healthy and like they kind of had like a core going when before the whole incident with Miles Bridges, like they were in that playoff contention area. You know, they were like a 500 team and they were looking good, and then things sort of derailed in very Hornets fashion. I wouldn't necessarily lay blame on that for to Gordon Hayward.
That's true, but at the same time, like think of an organization like the Miami Heat. Even when they weren't good, there was accountability on that team, right? Guys like Udonis Haslem really controlled that locker room and made sure the guys were set in the straight and narrow path. But you know, you look at Charlotte, and every other week there's some story about how there's a new controversy of players getting into, and not this like say Gordon Hayward is
Yeah.
entirely responsible for all these guys,
Like
like
Kai
he's their
Jones, for
dad.
example.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, as the veteran, the basically sole veteran presence on a team, you like it's kind of your job, your responsibility to, you know, like look after these players and make sure they're on the right path. And I don't think he's done that. So if I were to grade this trade, I'd give it maybe a B. I think it does help the Thunder. And I mean, they're gonna night like I think he can contribute for them, especially in the playoffs. He's gonna make that like 8 or 9 man rotation they're gonna run with. But I think that you know, you're giving up Trey Mann, a couple of young pieces. I think that you could have gotten a better, more reliable veteran player.
Hey man, you're still in my grades, but it's okay. I
Give
would also give a B. I
it a
think
B.
another trade or another team that you know, really sort of helped themselves out was the Sixers. They traded Marcus Morris, Fernand Korkmaz, and Patrick Beverley, and as well as like some minor draft capital to get back Buddy Hield and Campaign. So just what do you think of this move? Pat Bev on a podcast, you know, a month prior to this trade said, this organization better never trade me or there will be riots in the streets. In very Pat Bev fashion, he was traded. But you know, I think Buddy Hield and Campaign are two interesting players to add to a team, especially right now without Joel Embiid. So just what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I actually think I really like these moves from the Sixers. I'd give them about maybe, I want to say, and I want to mention they picked up Kyle Lowry off waivers,
Yes.
or off the buyout market. So I mean, great moves all around from Philadelphia. I think they kind of filled up all the gaps they needed. Buddy Hield's going to come in as a guy who's, you know, going to be a lights out shooter. Be just he's going to have so much space when Joel Embiid is on the floor because of his gravity and the players he's able to attract. I also really like getting Campaign and Kyle Lowry as just, you know, additional ball handlers, right? You can't have Tyrese Maxey do it all, and I think they sort of fix those gaps. And look, Marcus Morris, he was decent with the Sixers, but Furkan Korkmaz had been demanding out of Philly for a while. And Pat Bev, I mean, I think that's honestly the biggest loss of this trade. I think Pat Bev is a very winning player, and he contributes a lot, like on and off the court, in terms of like helping your team's culture and just, you know, shaping like a team that's gritty and willing to fight and willing to win. And so that, but I mean, at the end of the day, we're talking about Patrick Beverley. So it's not the biggest loss in the world. So I would give the Sixers a solid B plus, maybe an A minus, I'd even say. I think that I really like these moves, and don't think they had to give up too much to get these players. What do you feel?
Yeah, I'll still keep it at a B plus. I think this is just like slightly below like the level of like the Knicks and the Mavs. I don't think there were any sort of like A level trades at this deadline. I don't think anyone like hit it out of the park so hard that they like screwed over another organization. But yeah, I do like this move. Buddy Hield is just another great floor spacer to have. Campaign is a good secondary or tertiary point guard to have, especially with Kyle Lowry there, you know. You might run into some injuries or some issues, so having Campaign as that third guy, that's a great third string, guy to have there who can definitely get into the rotation even on a consistent basis. But ultimately, this team is gonna needed somebody else for Joel Embiid to be able to kick out that ball too in the corner and just knock down a shot, and that guy's healed every single time, so he's really gonna help them out.
Totally agree. And I think good to see for Philadelphia fans that their team made some moves and was active at the trade deadline. Another team I want to talk about is the Phoenix Suns. Not too much to talk about here, but they did sort of shore up their depth, getting Royce O'Neale from Brooklyn and David Roddy from Memphis. Just quick thoughts, like, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that this makes the Suns even scarier. They also got did they get Xavier? No, wait, they didn't get Xavier Tillman. It was David Roddy from the Grizzlies who they got. But this is just scary to me, honestly, because the one thing that we talked about the Suns is, they have the stars, but they're never going to have the depth, especially because they just don't have the money to do it. But they did it the right way. Royce O'Neale is going to be a great fit there, and David Roddy is just the extra grit that they needed that this team didn't really have. Absolutely, sort of home run moves for the Suns, especially because they gave up literally zero to get them.
Yeah, didn't have to give up much to get these guys, but at the same time, I'm still not big on Phoenix. I think that they have some serious problems in their team construction, and I think that injuries might come to plague them. But over like on paper, these are good moves. Give it a solid B. I mean, nothing too earth shattering, but like decent to pretty good moves. The last two teams I want to talk about are two teams that didn't make any moves, despite them being very active in conversations prior to the deadline, and that's the Chicago Bulls and the Los Angeles Lakers. So, I mean, both teams in somewhat different situations, but neither opting to actually make any moves this deadline. So, what are your thoughts on Chicago and Los Angeles?
Specifically for Chicago, I was shocked just because it's the same mistake that you're making year after year. This is the third year in a row they should have probably blown this team up, and they're delusional because they think Alex Caruso is a untradeable asset. They think that DeMar DeRozan is their future building block to win them a championship,
At
and
34 years old.
at 34 years old, exactly. And you just can't do anything with that. Like, there's nothing. If you're a Bulls fan, I'm sorry. Like, just absolutely abhorrent organization. Like, there's just nothing positive I can say about this. Absolutely F. Worse than the Pistons. At least the Pistons tried something. As far as the Lakers go, I could talk for a while about this, but I'm gonna try to keep it concise. There's always sort of a Lakers tax. I think a really good sort of illusion that somebody talked about when it comes to the Lakers and like trades is, when you go to a foreign country and you walk into a market, people kind of like they're checking you out. They're seeing like, do you have a lot of money or not? Like they're looking at your clothes. They're just making assumptions about you, right? And the Lakers are the guy who walks into, the shop and they're wearing the nice tailored suit. They're wearing the Gucci shoes, they're wearing the Prada glasses, and they're wearing a custom tie. Though that's the Lakers, right? That's the organization. Every single time they're always in the deadlines. So they're gonna get charged a premium price. And the Lakers, when they shopped around, it was, oh, you need to pay two first picks for Bogey. Oh, but for the Knicks, we want Quentin Grimes and Evan Fournier, right? So like that's the kind of treatment they got. And I commend the Lakers for not making moves, because it resulted in them ending up with Spencer Dinwiddie on the buyout market.
Okay, that's
Look,
true. Being
not that that's
patient.
like not that Spencer Dinwiddie's like some game changer for the Lakers, right? But ultimately, what were you going to get out of this buyout market? You're not looking for a third star. That should not that was the wrong decision. So you ultimately end up with a guy at Spencer Dinwiddie's level, and you got him for free.
That's a good point, and I think that patience really is a virtue. I think the Lakers have been very prone to being quick in the trigger to make these big name moves that might not necessarily work, and sacrificing depth, sacrificing the future. And so for the Lakers to not make a lot of moves shows a lot of poise, a lot of maturity. So honestly, in retrospect, I think that that was a solid move. And yeah, and then he basically gets Spencer Dinwiddie for free, which I think was honestly a great addition. Because you didn't have to give anything up to get him, and he's going to be a decent part of your rotation. As for Chicago, I fully agree with you there. I think that, the time to sell was 2 years ago. The second best time to sell was right now, and you didn't do it. So I don't understand what they're thinking in terms of building around a 34-year-old DeMar DeRozan. You're not going to be a championship contender, even when LaVine, DeRozan, and DeMar are all
Vooch.
healthy. Or sorry, I said yeah, DeMar twice, I think. But yeah, Vooch, LaVine, and DeMar is not a championship-winning trio in the modern NBA. I think that now would have been a great time to sell, right? LaVine is out for the season. The Bulls are kind of stalling. You don't know what's up with Lonzo Ball. Kobe White is having a great season, like truly a breakout season that I think that you could really opt to build around. And you have some decent young talent on this team. Why not sell? Why not get some young assets back? I'm sure a team like OKC would have been more than happy to send you a couple young guys to get a guy like DeMar DeRozan, or a guy like Nikola Vucevic, if they so choose. But they didn't make that move, and I think for that, I'm gonna have to give them an F as well. Worse than the Pistons. That's why I gave the Pistons a D minus, so I could give the Bulls an F, and I'll give the Lakers a B plus because they didn't really change up the formula too much, but they did come out above average because they were able to get Spencer Dinwiddie for free. So I would give the Lakers a B plus.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Let's move on to some of the more like actual things happening in the NBA, post deadline. Just some of the like hot teams and some of the cold teams right now going around the NBA. I want to start with the Golden State Warriors. This is a team who we were down on for a little bit, especially with, sort of the Klay Thompson slump and, Andrew Wiggins. Like the whole team just looked very, very poor. And Steph Curry wasn't playing well. But now they're 7-3 in their last 10 games, back up to 500. They're playing Utah right now, so they have the chance to head into the break, the All-Star break above 500. And they're 14-14 at home and 12-12 on the road. I don't know the last team that a team was 500 at home and on the road. That's very unique, especially because the Warriors in their championship year were a team that never lost at home almost, and they could never win on the road. It's very much the opposite of what they were in that championship season. And the
Yeah,
team's very, very similar. So just what do you think of this past 10 games for the Warriors, and what are you seeing that's different from when they started the season so cold?
I mean, it just seems like they're clicking a little bit more. I mean, I honestly, I think that we have to just talk about Steph Curry and the brilliance he's had in these past few games. I mean, you just check the box score every single night, and this guy's putting up incredible numbers. And so, I mean, just past few games, he's had 41, 42, like 60 points against the Hawks in a loss, mind you. And just seeing some major contributors from the rest of the team too. I mean, it was, I'm not fully bought in on this Warriors resurgence though. I think this might be the push they need to get into the play-in, but in terms of them being a real threat this year, I still don't see it. I think there's real flaws in this team. Even though they have beat some quality opponents, they just beat the Clippers last night. I don't know. This
They
seems
lost
more
to the
like a.
Clippers last night.
Oh, they did? Never mind.
Yeah.
It was a close
Yeah,
game though. I didn't actually watch the
it
whole
was
game.
very close.
I thought I read something about them winning. Regardless, they've beaten a lot of quality opponents. That's the point I'm trying to make. And they've been competitive with
Yeah.
others like Los Angeles. So I think this is more of a flash in the pan kind of moments. They still have a major Klay Thompson problem. We even saw tonight that Klay Thompson was coming off the bench. Steve Kerr decided to bench Klay Thompson. And that's the first time since his rookie season. So yeah, I just think that like they're not gonna be able to figure out this Klay Thompson thing. There's no more moves to make. And then you still have to think about the whole Chris Paul fit. So I'm not big on this Warriors run. I don't know if you have any additional insight on like how they've been sort of turning the ship around, but yeah, I see it more as a fluke than anything.
Yeah, this is what I see. I think the Warriors are playing better. I think the re bringing back Draymond has helped them a lot. I think Andrew Wiggins is playing a little bit better. And I think overall this team, yes, their guys are playing better. Like there's no question about that. It's not just a fluke. But I also see the law of averages playing out. The Warriors have played the most close clutch games of any team in the league. Every single game they play in practically is a close game down to the wire. You're going to win some of those, you're going to lose some of those. And for the most part, they've been losing a lot of those. So now they're winning some of them. And I expect them to go back to losing some of them and winning some of them. And I don't know if you've seen the statistic, but like the stat that like Steph Curry has the most like clutch time points of any player in the NBA.
Yeah.
It's like The thing is, he's also has three times, the amount of clutch time as, the other top five guys. So, I think, Steph Curry is a very clutch player, and he's hit some crazy shots. Like, I don't know if you saw that buzzer beater he hit. I don't remember what game it was, but it was recently, and it was to win
In
the game. It was,
overtime?
yeah, crazy.
Yeah, remember that one?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm trying to remember who it was
I don't
against.
remember who it was against, but like, I do think that this
Oh,
team has.
versus Phoenix.
Yes, it was versus Phoenix. I think this team has some decent potential, but I don't see this team being more than like a play-in team that can make it to the first round. Like, I
Yeah.
think that's the ceiling of this team.
I'm with you there. And I mean, we didn't even mention like Chris Paul having to come back into this team. He's been out, and so obviously they were like okay with Chris Paul, but I don't think that that's a recipe for success when you have Chris Paul, Steph Curry, and a super washed Klay Thompson. I mean, Klay, it's
Especially
more
now that
than
Klay Thompson is going to be coming off the bench. Like, now you've all size in your backcourt.
I don't really get it. I don't get it. I don't know what you do if you're Steve Kerr. And the thing with Klay Thompson that is so perplexing is like, it's not even his shot making anymore. It's his decision making, right? Like the shots he chooses to take, like what he does when he has the ball. Like, because you can miss shots, you can, your averages can go down, and you can like learn to take on a different role and be less trigger happy and decide to, work on your playmaking. Screen, cut, do all the little things that can make you a valuable player, but Klay Thompson refuses to do that, and that makes it him very hard to work with if you're Steve Kerr. And so, not big on the Lakers, or not big on the Warriors. Sorry, Freudian slip, maybe.
Not
Oh
big on the
my God.
Lakers, Rafa. What are you saying?
Let's actually talk about the Lakers, though, because they are 7-3 in the last 10. We obviously mentioned that they added Spencer Dinwiddie. And it seems like maybe they're starting to figure it out a little bit. And we've been seeing some great performances from D'Angelo Russell ever since he was in those trade talks. Rui Hachimura had an amazing game last night. So, I mean, Hunter, what are your thoughts on the Lakers? Are they finally figuring it out? Do you think this is a real contender, or is this just like another first round exit team?
It's something interesting with this new starting lineup of D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reaves, LeBron James, Rui Hachimura, and Anthony Davis. The Lakers are undefeated. They're 7-0. That new starting lineup is working. Torian Prince is looking great off the bench. I think Darvin Ham has finally accepted that he was wrong, and I think that this team looks really good. Spencer Dinwiddie fit right in. I think it's going to take a little bit of adjusting, and I'm curious. He looks like 10 games into, his playing time with the Lakers, but I think it's a really good fit. I'm curious what it's going to look like when Jared Vanderbilt comes back and the Lakers get a little bit more healthy and get some of their depth. But I think this team actually is very dangerous. And this sort of this stretch since they had that big, 7-game road trip, a couple weeks ago, the Lakers are number one in the NBA in assist, assists. They're number one in assist to turnover ratio. They're the number one team in turnovers. Like, that means they're not turning the ball over, and they're also the highest assist team. That's an incredible statistic to be at. They're also hitting their threes at a 40% clip, which puts them at the fifth most in the NBA. That's very impressive. This Lakers team's offense has been clicking on all cylinders. If they can figure out how to combine this sort of offensive production with the defense of Anthony Davis and Gabe Vincent and that sort of early season, like in-season tournament type defense, this team is going to be very dangerous. And I don't just say that as a Laker fan, but I truly think that if this team can put two and two together, they're going to be able to be a team that can get all the way, especially because we saw what this team looked like against the Nuggets. There was no D'Angelo Russell in that game. There was no game, or there was no Vanderbilt in that game, and the Lakers were. Sorry,
What are you,
what's with the face?
Hunter? Well, you're saying we saw what this team looked like against the Nuggets.
Right,
Hunter,
we
we
lost
looked
that game.
exactly like we look like against them in the Western Conference Finals.
Right, but
We
just
played
hear me out.
competitive, but we just didn't have enough to take it over the finish line.
Right, but we had let's talk about that. None of we had or we were missing our top four perimeter defenders. The team was missing every single guy who could have defended the guys who were hitting the shots at the end of the game. You're expecting Jamal Murray to be, contested by D'Angelo Russell, or sorry, not by D'Angelo Russell. You're expecting him to be contested by Torian Prince, and you're expecting that Michael Porter Jr. is going to be contested by Austin Reaves. Of course he's going to hit his shots because Michael Porter Jr. doesn't even notice that Austin Reaves is standing there,
Who's gonna
especially
guard
when he's
Michael
coming off the
Porter
screens.
Jr.?
Vando.
Okay,
Right? No,
fair.
honestly, Vando's probably guarding Jamal Murray, but realistically, that means you can have at least Taurean with a hand there, right? So ultimately, I'm not. We don't have to get into the specifics of this stuff on the pod for too long, but just realistically, this Lakers team with a little bit more perimeter defense in that game has a real shot to beat them. And, earlier in the season, if you told me that, when we were really struggling, that the Lakers were going to be very competitive against the Nuggets and look like they did last year, I would have said, please, please get back to that, because the Lakers were nowhere near that to start this
Okay,
season.
Hunter, but like you got to put this into context. We're celebrating being competitive with the Nuggets, not winning any games, being competitive. And I know you
Right,
could
but
say
the thing is, we've won every game since then.
you can have your if, ands, or buts, right? About like, oh, we were injured, blah, blah, blah. But there's always going to be those little asterisks. And that's what we saw last year in the Western Conference Finals. I'm just concerned about this team not having enough. Like, I think that I'm not sure about this team. I don't know. Like, the loss against the Nuggets was suspect, and it's convincing these past few games, and I think Spencer Dinwiddie is going to help, but, is he enough? Is he the guy to really take us over the edge? Like, if we were in another series against one of these conference contenders, like, our hometown rivals, the Clippers, the Nuggets, like one of these real powerhouses out west. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. And I think that, I do think a guy like Gabe Vincent can be a real difference maker if he comes back and he looks like he did in Miami, especially last year. I think he can really be that guy because he's a two-way player, right? He's going to hit
Right, but the
shots.
thing is,
Yeah, go ahead.
just generally speaking, with your point like about the NBA, I don't know if this Lakers team can beat those teams. There's no guarantee. This Western Conference is so competitive. The top of this conference is so talented. There's so many teams that could be there, right? Like we don't even talk about OKC or Minnesota, teams that are unproven but just as talented and just as strong as the Nuggets and the Suns. And even teams at the bottom, like the Warriors, can win any game on any given night. As poor of a constructed team as they are, you can never discount Steph Curry, and the Kings and the Mavs. Like, it's just a very loaded Western Conference. So there's no guarantee about anything. But all I want from the Lakers is to be in a position to be able to win on any given night. And I think this team has that.
That's fair. And what I just want to shout out D'Angelo Russell. Been a great pickup or been a great guy for me all season long in fantasy. I think a career high in assists yesterday.
Yeah,
I guess the guy's
17.
17 assists. Shout out D'Angelo Russell.
Rui Hachimura as well.
Yeah,
Career high
I
in
mean,
points at 36.
him and AD were dominating that game. Great to see. And overall, I'm always going to be behind my Lakers no matter what. So I'm just hoping, we continue this momentum going forward. Another team I want to talk about real quick is the Bucks, because obviously last pod we talked about them hiring Doc Rivers. They've been 4-6 since then. Three double-digit leads blown in the fourth quarter. Kind of the Doc special, maybe people are saying, because obviously I think I have to now adopt the pro Doc Rivers position because I kind of defended his hiring last pod. So I have to stick with that now. And Damian Lillard has also been in a slump pretty much all season. If you've watched him, you would have thought that this was a match made in heaven. Damian Lillard with the spacing around Giannis Antetokounmpo driving to the rim and kicking out. But no, it's not been that way. He's really not looked like himself and is actually shooting worse percentage-wise from three than Giannis, which is insane. Giannis is shooting 30%, Dame shooting 29%. So, I mean, Hunter, like the Bucks are still doing really well out east. I think they might be three right now. I think Cleveland might have jumped up to
Yeah, I think
two.
they're in the three seed.
But yeah, I mean, are you concerned about Milwaukee? What are your early thoughts on the Doc Rivers moves? And do you think Dame's going to pull it together by playoff time?
Look, my thing is just like with this whole coaching situation. Like, you fire Adrian Griffin and bring Doc Rivers because Damian Lillard is unhappy and he doesn't really think that Adrian Griffin's system is allowing him to shine as a player and, find his way, and it's too complicated. Well, the same issue. Damian Lillard looks the same since the Doc Rivers hiring. He doesn't look like he's blossoming anymore, or there's any more Dame Giannis action than there was under Adrian Griffin. It's really blown my mind that, the amount of power that Dame held in this situation to be able to say, I don't like our coach, who is a very has a very good winning percentage. And now I want Doc Rivers, a guy who's very unproven. We don't have to have this Doc Rivers conversation too much, but I think this is more of a reflection on Damian Lillard than it is on Doc Rivers. And just like blowing these double-digit leads is a bad telltale sign, especially at this point in the NBA season. This is the point in the season where good teams start to define themselves and like show the kinds of teams they are. Like they blew a double-digit lead to Portland. Like that's just a very a winnable game and a game you should be winning every single time if you are Milwaukee. Now, am I going to blow this out of proportion? No, I think that they could still be the team that gets to the NBA Finals. Really, it just needs to click. It just needs to happen. Like it might just be an epiphany, but they're not putting themselves in a good position to be able to have that happen.
Sure. Yeah, I agree there. And I think that, they've lost some very winnable games. I think it's a matter of just still trying to figure it out. Like Doc Rivers, I'm going to give him more time. I am going to take the pro Doc Rivers
Yeah.
position
Ten
on this.
games isn't enough, to be fair.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll see how they look post All-Star break. And I think, they have enough talent here to beat any team in the league. So I'm still big on the Bucks. We'll see how they end up incorporating a guy like Pat Bev. He's already sort of made his mark. I mean, his first game in there, you saw the clips of him like with the clipboard, like trying to fire up his guys. So I
Yeah.
think that was a good pickup for them. But we can move on, talk about another team. Obviously, the team that dethroned them at two, and that's Cleveland. They've been on an absolute tear. I think we talked about them last time, but like just to mention again, they have won 18 games in the past 20. And like they've just been absolutely balling. Donovan Mitchell's been balling. Jarrett Allen has been looking great. He's looking like a fringe all-star, maybe an all-star if there was more slots. And just in general, Cleveland seems to be figuring this out without with Garland coming back recently and Mobley still out for a little bit. So, I mean, do you think that this run from Cleveland is indicative of them like ready to take the leap and make some waves this playoffs, or what are your thoughts on Cleveland's kind of resurgence this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's legit for sure. I think we just have to kind of see like how do Jarrett Allen and Evan Mobley and the guys in that front court respond to kind of what happened last season. I don't think there was any question as to whether this team was good or whether they could be the number one or number two seed in the Eastern Conference and have this sort of run. It's incredibly impressive, really put on the back of Donovan Mitchell, who's now definitely within MVP talks. But, I think that this is all stuff we could have expected out of this team this season. I think it's surprising given the amount of injury. But I think it just boils down to can we see this happen in a series against the Knicks, against a very physical team where, Jarrett Allen and Evan Mobley might get bothered by Julius Randle and Isaiah Hartenstein. These guys really could, abuse that talent. And, we have to see how the Cavs respond.
Yeah, I think that this team really needs to like, if they gotta learn to have that sort of tenacity and grit you need to win a series in the playoffs. We
Yeah.
have that famous quote from Jared Allen last year, like the lights were too bright or lights were brighter than expected. So we'll see if they figured out that part of their team. But yeah, I agree. I think this is encouraging to see for Cleveland. I'm a little skeptical. I mean, you look at the teams they're beating, a lot of times they're beating up on the Raptors, they're beating up on the Pistons, they're beating up on all these bad teams. So they did have some quality wins in there against the Clippers, against the Bucks, etc. But strength of schedule does factor into this run, I think, a little bit. I'm curious how the fit is going to be with Mobley. But in theory, this team does have the pieces to be like a. I think their ceiling is like a second round team. I think if there's still conversations about Donovan Mitchell wanting out and like he's going to leave in the offseason, like how much of a run are you really going to be able to put together? So
Yeah.
I'm skeptical of Cleveland, but I think that they have some things to be excited about in Jarrett Allen and Darius Garland looking great together. So I think with that, we can move on to our final topic, that just being All-Star Weekend, because that's this weekend. Some exciting stuff in store. We got the Rising Stars Challenge. I think we can kind of just go through each challenge and just kind of talk about maybe who we think is gonna win, and maybe just talk about if we're excited for it. So for the
Yeah.
Rising Stars, you want to go through who's in it?
Yeah, so the
Some of the
Rising Stars is
notable,
working this.
sorry, some of
Yeah,
the like
I
more
won't go through the
notable,
whole team.
yeah.
Yeah. But How it works is the same as how it worked last year. There's four teams, and they're kind of going to compete in like a playoff style bracket, and whatever team wins at the end wins. The big ones, there's Team Pau, which is obviously Pau Gasol. The big names on his team are going to be Victor Wembanyama, Brandon Miller, Jaime Jaquez, Brandon Podziemski, Jabari Smith Jr. I like this team a lot. For Team Temeca, I don't know her last name, but I believe she was a WNBA player. It's gonna be Paolo Banchero, Scoot Henderson, Keegan Murray, Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren, Keontae George. Solid team as well. And then for Jalen Rose, we have Chet Holmgren, Derek Lively, Jalen Williams, Jeremy Sochan, and Benedict Mathurin are the big guys there. And then for Team Detlef Schrempf, for a lot of you guys don't know who Detlef Schrempf is, but he was a baller back in the day, okay? And he has the G League team, so I have many of the guys, but the notable guys there are going to be Mac McClung and Imani Bates. I'm a big Imani Bates fan. He's not listed on here, but he replaced one of the injured players, I believe Ron Holland. So,
Yeah,
well,
I
just
got.
are you even interested in the Rising Stars?
I
Is
mean,
this something you're
I am not gonna watch this game, but I'm pretty sure Team Powell is gonna win. They have a great squad. I mean, you got, number one, number two pick in the draft, and Wembanyama and Brandon Miller, Jaime Jaquez. Like, you basically got the three rookie of the year candidates on the same team. Plus, you got some
How did this
solid
happen? And
guys.
Brandon Podziemski?
Yeah, Podziemski's in there, Jabari Smith Jr., Cason Wallace, and Bilal Coulibaly, all really solid players. I think the second best team, I think it kind of goes in order of strength. I think that, you have an all-star in Paolo Banchero on Team Tamika, but besides that, like, I mean, not nowhere near as good as Team Pau. So I'm a roll with my Laker guy. I'm a roll with Pau. You agree?
Yeah, I think it's also cool to have Pau being the mentor for Victor Wembanyama in this case, like sort of like a former great like shooting big, like sort of like the old school shooting big versus the new school like prototypical like shooting big. So
Yeah.
it's kind of a cool
Can I just mention though, Victor Wembanyama, I've changed my tune entirely. I think he's definitively the rookie of the year. I think he's sort of made an
Yeah, I agree.
amazing run as of late. I mean, just the other night, like triple double with
10
blocks. Like, are you
blocks.
kidding me? And just like video game numbers, you watch this guy play, he does it on both ends of the floor. He'll get like some insane chase down block and then just come back, hit you with a step back three. And we're talking about a guy that's 7'3". So Vic is my rookie of the year. We'll talk
Yeah,
more about
Euro
award
steps.
races. Yeah,
He'll do the Euro
next.
step slam dunk from the 3-point line, like just
It's
ridiculous.
ridiculous. It's everything we would have hoped and more. But speaking of dunks, let's talk about the slam dunk contest. We have all the participants. We have Mac McClung, he's defending his title. Jaime Jaquez Jr., Jaylen Brown, good to see an all-star in there. And Jacob Toppin, not Obi Toppin, but is actually his brother, Jacob Toppin. So
Yeah.
for, who do you think's winning this one? And are you gonna watch this?
Yeah, actually, I'm curious because we finally have an all-star back in the slam dunk contest for the first time in a long time. I really don't know, how bouncy Jacob Toppin is. Like, if he's anything like his brother, he could definitely win it. Jaime was a surprise pick for me, but I'm curious to see what his highlight reel is going to look like. He's definitely very athletic, but I didn't think of him as like sort of like flashy slam dunk kind of guy. Jaylen Brown better not be doing any dunks with his left hand because if he does, he will be getting a zero every time.
That's
But
funny.
if he is dunking with his right hand, I think Jaylen Brown can be very dangerous. Could be another slam dunk champion for an all-star. I'm going to go Jaylen Brown simply because I think the NBA needs an all-star to win the slam dunk contest.
I'm gonna go Mac McClung. I think that he kind of revitalized the slam dunk contest last year, and I'm really
I
excited to see
agree.
what he's gonna cook up, especially since like it's kind of all he got. I mean, he's it's not like he's doing much. He's in the G League. So, I mean,
He needs it. He
he's,
needs the money, bro.
yeah, seriously, like he, it's life or death out there for him. So, he's been practicing. Let's move on to talk about the 3-point contest. We have all the participants here, some really big names: Malik Beasley, Jalen Brunson, Tyrese Haliburton, Damian Lillard, Lauri Markkanen, Donovan Mitchell, Karl-Anthony Towns, and Trae Young. So,
Just
Hunter, who
real
do
quick,
you,
I just
yeah.
want to say that you said there's some big names in here, and you started with Malik Beasley.
I mean, hey, he's like leading the league in like total threes made this season, I
Yeah,
think. Something crazy.
he's insane this season.
Yeah, of course, players leave the Lakers, turn into generational shooters. But
Yep, that's
that's
just how
besides
it
the
is.
point. Who do you have
We're
winning
used to
this?
it. Really, these things can go to anyone. I'm gonna go ahead and give it to Ice Trey. I think Trey Young, this is his year. I think he wants revenge, especially for like not being an all-star this season. Like, I mean, he became an all-star as a replacement, but I think he's out for a little bit of blood. Just he wants something to be able to, especially, among Damian Lillard, among a peer, another fellow all-star Eastern guard, and Jalen Brunson as well. I think he wants to like solidify himself as, yeah, I'm that dude. I should have been there, not you.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that, he has like really might have that fire under his ass because he's been snubbed and wasn't picked initially, and he's been putting up insane numbers, and it's kind of the second year in a row. But I'm gonna go Tyrese Haliburton. I mean, he was obviously like having a great performance last year. I think that he was just shy, but I mean, he's been having a terrific season, shooting the ball at a really, really efficient clip, and I think that, he might just walk away with this one. So
I think,
yeah, I mean, isn't the game in Indianapolis?
yeah, it is.
He's gonna have that hometown crowd too, so I think
He
that's gonna
will.
be in his favor. So I
For
think,
sure.
yeah, finally we could talk about the skills challenge. So basically, yeah, let's see. We have three different teams. We have Team Pacers, obviously hometown Indy team, which is Haliburton, Mathurin, and Miles Turner. We have Team Top Picks, which is the former number one overall picks with Paolo Banchero, Anthony Edwards, and Wembanyama. And then Team All-Star, which is Scottie Barnes, Tyrese Maxey, and Trae Young.
I
So,
like how they said team all-star and picked like the fringe all-stars.
I mean, you're not going
I
to have LeBron James and Nikola Jokic in the skills challenge.
mean, that could be cool, you know?
They would dominate, though. Can you imagine Nikola Jokic and LeBron doing like the passing thing? Like, they
Oh,
would
so
nail that.
easy.
So, yeah, I mean, who do you have winning this?
I'll say team talk picks. I think that's realistically the best team, just across the board. I think it
Yeah.
really depends. Like, are we gonna see, Victor Wembanyama like be able to like get that pass on the first try? It's like it comes down to that kind of stuff. But ultimately, I think they're the best team. I just like want to say these are really random teams. Like, it's not
Yeah,
like Team
what?
Pacers versus like Team Bucks versus Team like Hawks or something. It's like they just picked the most random categories they could. Like, they just like asked around the NBA like and saw, like who wants to be in the skills challenge, and then like nine guys said sure we'll do it, and they just had to figure out what was similar between them.
Exactly, yeah. I'm gonna go team All-Star. I think, can't count on my guy Scottie Barnes. That we got the reserves. Yeah, like they do have the fringe guys, the reserves, and then Tyrese Maxey, which is funny. So I'm excited. I'm definitely gonna tune in for the at least a few of these events, slam dunk contest, three
Yeah.
point contest, and the All-Star game. So we'll be back next week to
And
cover the
also,
All-Star
Steph
game.
versus Sabrina.
Oh yeah,
We'll
definitely will
definitely tune
be
in for that.
watching that one. I think who do you have in that real quick?
Look, man. I feel like there's no right answer here. But I'm a take Steph. You can't dethrone the king.
I'm taking Sabrina, dude. I think he's gonna crumble. It's for charity, that's why. It's for charity, and Steph does not like that. So
Steph is against charity. You heard it here, folks.
that's a good place to call it. We'll be back next week to cover all things NBA, and recap All-Star weekend. So yeah, thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you all then. Take care.
Peace.